pretty quickly when playing it, I really fell in love with it. And it was one of those games too that when I was playing it, I managed to catch the attention of my wife Holly as well. And so we ended up playing a lot of it together. And it's a special game in that it's just, to this day, I've never played anything quite like it.
This is why you should play The Last Guardian. Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of Why You Should Play. When I said I was going to try to get more celebrities on this podcast, I wasn't exaggerating or lying. My attempts to blackmail, bribe, and seduce bear more fruit because today's guest, he is another person that wears many hats, both professionally and personally. He is first and foremost, and I would say probably most importantly, he would say as well, he is dog dad to Frisk. He is a fan of Chipotle, which he affectionately calls Chippers, which I appropriately had for dinner a few moments ago. He is a fellow physical games Chad and retro collector. In terms of video game fandom, it is Tomba and From Software, among a few others. And most prominently, he is executive producer at Last Stand Media, including co-host of Sacred Symbols and the primary host of Punching Up. He is Dustin Furman. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me. And I gotta apologize. You had to delay having a celebrity on. You had to just settle for me. But I appreciate it. And you got all the intricacies of my persona down, really, with all that. So I'm happy to be here and even happier to be talking about a certain game at hand.
Yes, and we will get to that in a moment. But honestly, before this episode can continue, I myself and the audience need to know, is Frisk doing good? She's well.
Frisk is doing absolutely fantastic. She Wonderful. Is happy because right now, I talked to you briefly before the show, yes. But yes. My parents are here because they are getting ready to go to Las Vegas this coming week. And so we're going to be watching their dogs. So she's not the only dog in the house right now. So she's just been running around trying to annoy my parents' dogs as much as possible and succeeding at doing that. But yeah, she's doing just fine. She was at the vet yesterday. She's doing, totally fine. No problems. So thank you so much for asking. She'll be happy to hear that.
Good. Then we can continue with the episode. And speaking of gambling, our episode today is what I would consider a creative gamble, not just in terms of the premise, but also in terms of how long the game took to develop. And we will expound upon that momentarily. But first, what I'd like to do is, before we get into what we've been playing, it's a funny little story. So by the time this show, this episode airs, I will have recorded and released sort of what I call the bookend Team Eco game. That is it Eco or Ico? I always
hear it as both. So I honestly don't know.
I'm going to say Eco. I think
that's what I've always thought it was. That's, Eco, but that's I've what heard I've said Ico, well. So I don't know.
Yeah. So by the time this episode airs, I will have recorded and released an episode on Eco, which is Team Eco's first game with the esteemed content creator known as Real Radic. And as it so happens, Real Radic, you appeared on his show recently. A great conversation that ran. That covered a wide range. I was amazed at the comprehensiveness of the subjects that he covered. And as it so happens, I reached out to Radic and I said, hey, what? Because I don't want to put my potential guests on the spot. I don't want them to be on this show without talking about a game that they really, really, truly evangelize for. And I said, Radic, what are some games that you want to evangelize for? And one of the games that he listed, as it so happens, was Eco. And I was like, huh, that's cool. I can do that one. It's been a long, long time. And then you, obviously, one of your games was The Last Guardian. And I'm like, well, with you appearing on his show and you two kind of recommending bookend games, I'm like, well, that's, the world is a funny place. It's the circle of life, honestly. So I like to think that all this was meant to be. It was some good karma. So yeah. It makes it extra special that fortune favored us on this. But Let's get into it. As a soft opening for every episode, what have you been playing?
Right now, it is just Baldur's Gate 3 for the most part. Just trying to navigate and figure out how to even play it. Not that I feel totally lost, but I realized, you know, last week on Sacred Symbols, I made fun of Chris because he's really save scumming the game. He's trying to like roll to unlock a chest, and if he doesn't get the roll he wants, he immediately restarts. And I'm not doing that. I'm trying to play the game, trying to not confuse myself. So I'm not necessarily save scumming everything, but there are a few times where I'm like, oh, that did not do what I thought it was going to do. Like, I don't understand fully the mechanics of the game. So I've been save scumming a little bit, but overall just having a fantastic time, a way better time than I would have ever thought with Baldur's Gate, just because I'm not normally into those types of games, but I'm having a good time with this one. And I'm like 20 hours in and I'm still on act one. So, you know, it's a pretty beefy game when it's like that.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I understand wanting to experiment with the mechanics because there is so much involved with the game and choice and consequence, not just in like dialogue options, but choice and consequence and how you experiment approaches to combat or other sort of character or environmental interactions. It's a lot of trial and error, honestly. I totally understand that. But with the sort of choices that I make, I am just going to go full embrace the chaos with that. Like whatever decisions I make, I'm going to go with. Because I feel like that's the most organic way to play those games. You know, obviously I've died in a couple of battles, and that's just because I didn't sort of use my imagination. Like there's one battle early on where I noticed a barrel. It was kind of accented in red, and I'm like, you know what? There's some video game history there. That barrel probably explodes, you know, based on my decades. And sure enough, it exploded and blew up like four out of six of the enemies, and it totally flipped the tide of the battle from where I went, oh no, I'm going to get overwhelmed and swamped, to, oh, I have this like in the bag now. So
yeah,
I'm excited to keep playing more of it. It is certainly a beefy game. I mean, there's another massive RPG that takes place in space that's looming.
Right.
But it's going to be some RPG goodness for the rest of the year between those two games. So now that we have that out of the way, this first sort of topic that I want to do with every episode as well is part of when guests propose a game. I feel like Last Guardian is, I believe it's among your top 10 games of all time, correct?
It definitely was at one point. Honestly, it's been a while since I've evaluated that list. So let's just say, yes, it is.
Let's say it's among your favorite games of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And so I feel like when people have certain games in that rarefied air of their taste, I feel like everyone has a personal story with the game, right? So do you have like a personal story with this game? Like what goes beyond just the game itself that you revere it so much?
The funny part about this game is that I think a lot of people that went into this game had a lot of history specifically with Ueda games and maybe Shadow of the Colossus specifically. And at the time when I played this game and it came out, I had not played Shadow of the Colossus at all. In fact, so I didn't really know what I was getting into. I just knew that I was intrigued by, you know, the game and the mechanics, but also just this character of Treecko, the giant bird dog. And it was a game that I knew I wanted to play, but it's tough because sometimes when, you know, particularly this time, I wasn't in the media space really at all, but you see all the reviews come out. Some of them are really positive and some of them are really negative. Some people hate this game. So it was tough back then because I was like, oh man, do I really want to spend $60 on this game when it's possible I might not like it at all? And pretty quickly when playing it, I really fell in love with it. And it was one of those games too that when I was playing it, I managed to catch the attention of my wife, Holly, as well. And so we ended up playing a lot of it together. And it's a special game in that it's just, to this day, I've never played anything quite like it.
Yes.
And I think that this is probably one of the hardest things to argue for it. But for the people that like this game, I feel like they understand is that I truly believe that some of the criticisms of this game were for people that, it sounds so rude to say they didn't get it, but their level of tolerance for, okay, so I guess to get into it slightly, it's just this idea that Treecko doesn't listen to you, and that really frustrated some people, is that they felt like they couldn't connect with this you know, get him to do what you want. You're fumbling around. And there is some of that. But for me, as like, well, at the time I wasn't a dog owner, but I grew up a dog owner and a dog lover. And it's like, yeah, well, this is kind of accurate. Like, this is what it's like. And mm-hmm. it's about like growing that bond. And that's one of the things that the game does so well. So mm-hmm. there's no, you know, crazy particular story other than just playing it. And I was like, man, I don't know what people were talking about when they said they didn't like this game. And then I guess to just kind of top it off to finish out here is just, I did end up playing Shadow of the Colossus, specifically the remake, a few years later when that came out. And I think that's a great game. I think it's awesome and has a lot of great ideas, but it didn't hit as hard as Last Guardian did for me. And I vastly prefer Last Guardian to Shadow of the Colossus. And, you know, I understand that to some people that's like probably a wild, crazy take, because so many people reverse Shadow of the Colossus. And I get it, because I think that game's awesome. But I don't know if it's just something that was my first Ueda game, and that's the one that just hit me at the right spot in the right time.
I totally understand that. And I think it's a testament to Ueda that Last Guardian does have that very specific emotional impact, which we'll expound on more later on in the episode. Yeah, I totally get it. And it's funny that you reminded me. I thought about it earlier, but I forgot to put it in my show notes, is that while I was replaying this, I was actually dog sitting a dog myself.
Oh, nice.
So I was going from like playing Last Guardian to going over and feeding the dog, making sure it had water, making sure it went outside. You know, and it was just like overjoyed to see me wagging its tail because it knew I was going to feed them and pay attention to them. And so, yeah, it's funny how games sort of really hit a very time and place for us. And I know when I was doing research, I noticed that you did, in fact, prefer Last Guardian over Shadow of the Colossus. And I thought, well, that's even more interesting of a guest to have on, because I mean, Shadow of the Colossus is, I mean, people that love it have it among their favorite games of all time as well. Right. But I think all of Ueda's games, I would consider them works of art. And which is a good segue, because I want to delve in a little bit, kind of a little background information on this man named Fumito Ueda and his team, who was then called Team Ico. First of all, if any of you haven't seen a picture of Fumito Ueda, he is a very, very handsome man.
I need to look this up.
Yeah, he's very, especially with longer hair, I'm like, oh man, he's a borderline movie star. Very, very handsome. So while you look that up, I'll go into a little bit of academic history stuff.
Yeah, go for it.
Fumito Ueda joined PlayStation. He joined the PlayStation banner, and Team Ico was founded in 1997. Their first game under Team Ico was called Ico, and which, again, we'll have done an episode on by the time this airs with the esteemed Mr. Raddick. So we will discuss that game later on. 4 years later, also for the PS2, so Ico was 2001 on the PS2. 2005 was Shadow of the Colossus on PS2, and that is one of those games where it happens very rarely, but it was one of those games where I saw my cousin play it and I'm like, I can't believe this is an actual real game. Like you ride out there and you tackle these colossi, and I could go on and on and on, but I digress. So, which leads us to 11 years later was when Last Guardian was released. And you're sure many of you were thinking, geez, that was 11 years. That must've been quite a troubled development. And sure enough, the history with The Last Guardian was it began development in 2007, originally intended for the PS3. It was revealed in E3 of 2009 with I believe, a very short cinematic. And it's funny, if you go back and look at that 2009 reveal, the visuals look like previs from movies. You know, they look like really undetailed, not very well rendered, not very well lit, as compared to the eventual release would be. So development was troubled, and it was moved to the PS4 in 2012. So at this point, it had already been 5 years. In the meantime, Ico and Shadow of the Colossus were released as a collection in 2011 on PS3. So that kind of tells you how long development took. The development did take so long that Ueda and his team spun off into their own team called Gen Design. And outside of the sort of traditional Sony first-party label, but they still finished development along with some other remnants of the team in Japan Studio when the game eventually released on PS4 on December 7th, 2016. So as you can imagine, the hype was very, 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 very high coming off of Shadow of the Colossus and the literal decade plus long wait for this game. And do you remember, you said you remember the game releasing, and I vaguely remember it. Obviously, it was a very hyped game coming off of Shadow of the Colossus. And so I definitely think that's part of what factored into some of the negative reviews for the game, as there was, I think there's inevitably going to be some letdown, isn't there, with how long a game takes to release.
Yeah, well, and I think that this is something that happens with a lot of games. You know, there's been some talk about The Order 1886, which is my other wild take game that I thought about.
That's another divisive game. It surprised me how many people like it. And a lot of people hate it, obviously, as well. I'm kind of in between. But
I think that a lot of times, and we still see this now with video games, is that people look at the game and then they see how short it is or how long it is, and then based value purely on that. And the thing about Last Guardian is that it is not a very long game at all. I was surprised. I was looking through some YouTube playthroughs, and I think I saw that it can be beaten like 4 hours or something if you know what you're doing. Okay, yeah. No. Here's a full playthrough. It's 5 hours and 23 minutes. So it's not very long.
Yeah, there's a trophy for beating it under 30 hours, and there's a trophy for beating it in under 15 hours, and there's a trophy for beating it under 5 hours. I think the average playthrough is around 12 hours.
Yeah, so I think that probably played into some of it, at least here in the West, is that people saw, you can beat in 5 hours, you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. So I think there's some of that. And then I think, too, that it was a game that, you know, you're talking about how it was, like, troubled in development hell for so long. And when that happens, like, the expectations just continually get sky high. Mm-hmm. And I think that they could have done a game that was, like, a safer sequel to Shadow of the Colossus, but this game is, while it has a lot of that similar DNA, it's quite different. And so if you really wanted something that was a pseudo sequel to that game, Last Guardian is not it. And so I think that with it being that long in anticipation for this game, and then this being what it was, I think that some of those people are just like, this really wasn't what I wanted, and we're out. And I get that, because I've had situations where I've played a game that I've waited for. I'm like, yeah, this isn't what you don't give it a fair shake because you don't look at what it actually is. You're only thinking about what you want it to be. And maybe that, you know, that's not the case for everybody. I'm not saying that everyone who didn't like this game wasn't objective about it, but I think that at least at the time, at release, I feel like that was probably a huge factor of it. But I think it's worth saying, too, and I touched on this a little earlier, is that this can be a very frustrating game, and it's not flawless in its execution by any means. This game, I feel like, had a lot of times I was frustrated while playing it. Mm-hmm. So you can't chalk all to, it's like, oh, well, that's the intended design, that Trico doesn't listen. It's like, no, there is some jank in this game that definitely weighs it down, but there's a lot of things, like I said, too, that are just seriously unparalleled and unlike anything that I've played in a game before.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a couple of things that you talked about that I was thinking in my head, is that with how long this game took, I think a lot of people imagined the game in their heads. That was not the game that they got, right? Because I think on a sort of superficial level, and I can discuss this as kind of the themes, is like, on a surface level, there's a lot of common themes with all of his games, right? There's like usually very minimal dialogue. There's some sort of companion, you know, in Eco, it's the girl, and Shadow of the Colossus, it's your horse, and in Last Guardian, it's Trico. And oftentimes it's desaturated colors, but the lighting is usually just wonderful with beautiful art style and landscapes, but it's very, very different. I think in Last Guardian, it's almost an anti-Shadow of the Colossus in some respects, you know, because in Shadow of the Colossus, you're sent out there to kill these large beasts. Whereas with Last Guardian, the entire premise of the game is you and this giant beast need each other to survive, and your relationship grows over the course of the game. Another aspect is there's this concept of video games as art. And I think Ueda's games really are, I would put them up there on the pedestal when we talk about video games are more than just, you know, they're more than just computer code. They're more than just mechanics or systems. They are true works of art, and I think they elevate the medium, and I think they are very, very important and vital, and they have artistic merit. You know, obviously, like you said, there's issues mechanically and, you know, with the controls and the camera and such, but there is just so much beauty with all of his games that they should never be dismissed, and I think everyone should try them without a doubt.
Right. Yeah, and it's honestly, I really do believe that all games are considered art. Of course, I'm not saying you're not saying that. All games are considered art to different degrees, just like you can have a drawing, a stick figure, and then you have like the Mona Lisa. Both are technically you know, yeah, art, just art, to yeah. different degrees. But yeah. I will say that there is something about the quality of this game where I play a game like Doom Eternal and I have a great time playing it. But when it's done, it's like you feel satisfied because it was fun, but I kind of just move on to the next thing. It doesn't leave any kind of emotional impact. And so from the lens of looking this at an art piece from its emotional impact, this is a game that still has stuck with me all these years later. And I think that that's kind of something that you're touching on here with his games in particular. I mean, no spoilers, of course, but the ending of Shadow of the Colossus is like an iconic emotional ending that stays with people for the rest of their lives. And that's something that not every game can say that it's able to achieve. So there's definitely something special going on with Ueda's games.
Yeah, most definitely. And there is a purpose to pretty much everything, regardless of how well it's executed. And Last Guardian is certainly another one where it sticks with you and it stays with you. And that's clearly what he's going for with all of his games. And that's why I greatly respect them, regardless of the issues that I have. And obviously, like you said, every video game is art, but there's like an added sense of purpose with his games that when you know going in, like this game is going to be about something, some sort of like human condition is going to be talked about or addressed or gazed upon. So we got through all the development stuff, the chaos of that. What I wanted to talk about next is we talked about it very, very briefly, but I think it deserves its own segment, is the technical achievements and of Trico. And is Trico a boy or girl? I don't know. I think maybe a girl, a boy. I don't think it ultimately doesn't matter.
Yeah. But
Trico is, like you said earlier, Trico is a bird, sort of bird dog hybrid. It's kind of like what dinosaurs would look like in real life, you know, not the lizard types that we get in the movies and such, but it is like a sort of a bird dinosaur, but with a dog head. And it's very, very large, but the technical achievement is still astounding to this day. I mean, this game is coming up somewhat close to 10 years old. You know, it's 7 years now, and it's still astounding. The movement of specific feathers, how the wind affects the feathers, how the light hits Trico and the feathers, and also just its animal gestures. You know, it scratches itself, it rolls around, and like when it rolls around in water, the feathers get wet. It's very curious. It'll go off and like stick its nose in the little nooks and crannies. It's very expressive and it makes different noises, and grunts and roars and whispers. And I think all of this, again, there is a sense of purpose to all of this. It is to make it fully believable that you are just not on this journey with an NPC. You are on this journey with an actual living, breathing creature with thoughts and emotions, and is inquisitive and has fears, is angry, is impassioned, and, you know, is ultimately protective of the boy as well. If you want to go ahead and expound upon that.
Yeah. So first of all, it's crazy to think about this game running on a PlayStation 3, which is maybe part of the problem on why all the feathers on Trico, like individual feathers, like the way they ripple around in the wind and stuff like that, is just truly awesome. It's one of those games that I wish that they would do some kind of, even if it's just like a pseudo patch for the PS5 so we can get it a little up to the speed. It's not in a bad spot by any means. It's much like better off than a game like Bloodborne. But I know that if you have a disc copy and you run the game unpatched, you can play it at 60 FPS, which is kind of crazy.
Yep.
On PS5 specifically.
Yes, on PS5, yep.
So that's kind of cool. But I think that more importantly from its visuals is, of course, the AI code, or whatever you want to call it, behind Trico is just something that's truly crazy. Because at times, particularly early on, and I think that's where a lot of people got frustrated, is that Trico isn't necessarily like your friend. That you know, Trico is kind of unsure about you in a lot of ways and doesn't necessarily listen to you a lot. And that's one of the most amazing parts, is just how Trico adapts throughout the game. And it's not just reflected through cutscenes, but it's how he interacts with you, the player, as well. So, okay, obviously no ending, but I have one moment that I think perfectly portrays this, but I don't know if it's a spoiler. Where are we at with spoilers on this?
There's a way you can kind of like speak vaguely to it.
Yeah.
Opaquely.
Okay. Okay. I can be vague.
Okay.
So one of the things that I love the most, and I think this is portrayed through both cutscene and through Trico's actions, is that throughout the game, Trico is willing to take more risks in order to protect you. And this is portrayed a lot of different times. There's one moment in particular I won't get into that. Just like when it happens, you're like, dude, Trico is ride or die for me, and I'm ride or die for Trico, because there's just throughout the time you've spent together, this moment happens. You're like, wow, this is awesome. You're having this connection with this bird dog in a video game. But that's one of the things that makes it so special, is how lifelike and how spirited he feels, even though, of course, it's not real.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, you're just speaking vaguely to it made me recall a couple of moments. And the aspects that we mentioned of how expressive Trico is, all these small effects that they do to make it more and more believable makes that growing bond even more and more emotionally effective. And so when you get those moments of where Trico does things, you know, it's not, again, it's not a, really a spoiler. The bond grows and Trico becomes more emotionally attached to the boy. They're done in such cinematic ways that it's truly breathtaking.
Yeah.
And there aren't really necessary that many actual cutscenes. A lot of it is done in sort of like the God of War 2018 in camera. When you trigger a cutscene, a lot of it is just in the same one-shot take, you know, where you'll see like Trico jump up to a platform or wherever and navigate and help you out. It makes it feel even more immersive, like you're more, even more on that journey, similar to Kratos and Atreus and God of War.
Right.
So it really was prelude to that sort of game development. It's so funny. I was talking with someone else that one of my most frustrating points in the game was trying to solve a puzzle. And it's not, again, it's not a spoiler. There's puzzles. We'll go more into it in gameplay, but probably maybe the most frustrating part of the game for me was a puzzle you had to solve. And it was followed by one of the most breathtaking sequences in the game. And I just cracked up laughing. That's kind of Last Guardian. It just summed up in like a 10-minute span. It's about midway through the game. And I'm like, that just sums up this game perfectly. You can't help but like it in the end for how much it has going for it. You know, what kind of warts and blemishes aside.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that it is frustrating at points, and maybe it's intentional and sometimes it's not, but the payoffs in this game are just huge. And I had one other thing that I thought of that I wanted to just say for about Trico, is that obviously, you know, I was talking about like the more serious bond and connection, but, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm a dog lover. I've been a dog lover for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I loved so much about Trico is that there is unintentional humor in this game, where there'd be some times where you see Trico in the distance and his eyes are doing the glowy thing and you're like, what are you doing, dude? Like, get over here. Yeah. So there's stuff like that. And then a lot of dog owners would know, especially if you have a very energetic dog, they'll jump onto something and then like totally push something over and it's chaos for a moment. You're like, dude, what are you doing? And so Trico does that exact same thing, where you'll tell him to do something and he'll just totally make something crash or whatever. And it's like, oh man, you are like a really big dog in some ways. And I love that element of it.
Yeah. And another thing that I love, again, is there's a sense of purpose to pretty much everything in this game, is that the gameplay and the story and character interweave so well, where Trico needs the boy as much as the boy needs Trico. You know, oftentimes you have to, there's certain, this word has kind of become inflammatory nowadays, but there are some triggers for Trico. There's these like mirrors that you have to move out of the way, and things you need to destroy or gates you have to raise to help Trico. And all of these sort of gameplay elements, they are to strengthen the bond between the boy and Trico, but it's either like the boy helping Trico or Trico helping the boy. And I think it's just also very, very well done. That you mentioned the payoffs too. There isn't just a big payoff at the end. There's kind of payoffs that I alluded to throughout the story. There's like, hey, you got through this really tough puzzle. There's this amazing emotional payoff that signifies more companionship and trust between the boy and Trico. So you will get those sort of breadcrumbs of payoff throughout the game. It's not just going to be one big bomb at the end, though it is there and it's certainly extraordinarily effective. It does explore these overall themes in this game of like companionship and bravery and courage. Like, you as the boy, it's kind of insane, crazy things as well, with that little heights you have to go to make your way from point A to point B. And yeah, it's truly stunning. And again, some of these platforming and puzzle things that you have to perform are really, really breathtaking from a visual perspective. So was there, I guess, how can we maybe dance around this? Because I mentioned the kind of the themes of companionship and bravery and courage. And there's another theme that I don't even want to mention, because I consider it a spoiler, but was there kind of anything else that you can talk about without spoilers that kind of delves into their relationship?
You have to feed
Trico. Duh, you have to feed him. He's an animal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he likes
and there is, without spoilers, there is a sense of purpose to that as well. And oh boy, there is a payoff as well.
Yeah.
With that. So
yeah. As far as stuff we haven't covered,
the next aspect will be the gameplay, and that'll obviously be a little bit more inconsistent. So
yeah. I don't want to spoil anything, and I think I covered about, because like I said, for me, it's really about the almost pet-like relationship you have with Trico. And obviously, like, the journey they're on is very different than someone having a dog, right? But it's about, you have a relationship with a being that doesn't really understand. You can't communicate with words. You can only kind of communicate through your actions and your body language. And so, you know, that can be tough. And in this game, it's particularly tough just from some predispositions of Trico to be trusting. So, and from the boy's angle too, where Trico could absolutely crush him in 2 seconds. So of course they're going to be intimidated around one another in some different ways, but the way that it's paced throughout it is just really, really good.
Yeah, it really is excellent. I mean, it's not a spoiler. You start out the game where you have to feed Trico to start the game, and that sort of teaches you, hey, those are going to kind of be little markers throughout the game that you'll have to feed him. And it's done. That's how you initially gain Trico's trust, and you unchain it. You unchain it and you feed it. So it's like kind of like you would any sort of mistreated animal. You know, it's like, hey, your instinct is to, you know, free it and feed it. So that's how you gain initial trust like any sort of stray animal. So awesome. So the gameplay, obviously there's going to be a little bit more inconsistency with this one. It'll probably delve into some of our caveats as well. So I'll get into the basics of the gameplay. The premise is that you play as a small boy. He is unnamed. He speaks a fictional language that sounds, I don't know, kind of similar to Japanese. Also, there is a narrator, which I really liked the narrator touch. It added a sort of fairy tale aspect, like your grandfather telling you a story almost. So and the narrator's not overdone. It's not going to be too chatty. It kind of marks chapters or kind of transition points, if you will, and sometimes it'll occasionally give you a hint as to like, hey, we had to do this thing to get over this ledge or whatever. So play as a small boy, and there's an old man narrator. As the boy, you can walk and run, you can push and pull objects to help solve puzzles, and you can command Trico as well. So I don't know, this is maybe kind of a rough comparison, but I compare the puzzle gameplay of this game. I kind of call it like a really high production value, sort of a play dead game, like an Inside or a Limbo. You know, you're pushing and pulling objects to solve puzzles. There really isn't combat. There's some like little stone guard statues that you'll have to avoid and expose to Trico to get Trico to destroy. But yeah, go ahead and take it away with some of the gameplay aspects that people can expect.
Yeah, so you mentioned about like getting barrels to feed Trico and getting through different obstacles. You know, there's certain like barriers or triggers for Trico that you've got to move around. And it's fair to say, and I think this is also true of Shadow of the Colossus, is that the character you play as is just a little fumbly. Like, he's hard sometimes to control. He doesn't grip things the way you would expect. He kind of has like a weird momentum to him. It's definitely probably the weakest aspect of this game is just controlling the character, which again, I fully acknowledge, like that's one of the core things about any video game is the feeling of the controls. And so that is definitely a tough point for this game. But commanding Trico is kind of one of the more fun aspects. And I remember too, it can be tough at points where like I would line up for Trico to do something and then he would do something else. This wasn't a moment of Trico not listening. He was definitely listening to what I wanted him to do, but I couldn't like point the game, like get him to go the right direction, stuff like that. So that plays into a lot of the frustrating aspects that we're talking about earlier. And there's also just parts too where the humanoid, we'll say, enemies in the game can get really annoying when they can kind of like grab you and hold on to you and give you a game over. And there's some points where it's like, oh, come on, like it just gets so annoying. But those are kind of the main hangups. But I guess when it in terms of as you progress, and that's kind of really where I think the gameplay does pay off, is that you get to see as you progress, you see all these different environments, you see different scenarios and, you know, the different story beats and stuff like that. And that's really the thing that pushes you through.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil it, but again, it's such a brilliant interweaving of gameplay and story that to start out, you just command, hey, Trico, go to this ledge so I can climb up your head and jump on the higher ledge and maybe open this gate so you can get through and I can get up and through. And again, I don't want to spoil it, but, you know, that relationship grows to where you can get Trico to do other things that are quite frankly, much more awesome.
You
mentioned in the gameplay with the soldiers that grab you, and you just have to button mash, mm-hmm. you know, to hell to get these things off of you. And you learn subtle little things about the gameplay that I don't know if the developers intended or not. Again, you're a small boy, so you're not going to be like a Nathan Drake who's just nimble and can traverse ledges so freely and quickly and easily. So like one little thing that I learned is that when you fall as the boy, you have to wait a moment for his sort of getting up animation to complete before you start running again, or else you'll stumble again trying to get up. So I guess that's sort of like real life, is that if you try to run before really steadying yourself, you're going to stumble and trip over your feet even more. And what helped me with commanding Trico was if I aimed the camera in the exact same direction to where I wanted Trico to go, that seems to really help, whether it's going up high or going straight ahead or going down or what have you. So that really helps with me. And we'll get a little bit into more of that in caveats. But the main vehicle of this game is commanding Trico. And that's where the core of the game really lies. And that's where a lot of the payoff is, to where it does become easier and easier, to the point where there was a few cases of where Trico just did what I needed it to do without even me having to ask or command, much less having to point. And I love when the boy, he kind of like stomps his feet up and down very excitedly when he wants Trico to do something. Yeah. It's very, very cute and endearing, honestly. I can't really think anything else. I mean, the gameplay, again, is very minimal. Yeah, without spoilers, there's things that just, again, the interweaving of story and gameplay has massive, massive payoffs at the end. And was there anything else that you can remember that you wanted to point out with the gameplay itself?
No, nothing. I think we covered it pretty good, because like you said, it's not like I mentioned like Doom Eternal. It's not like there's all kinds of mechanics and crazy stuff going on. It's very much a story focused, puzzle focused game.
Yeah, and the puzzles are very, very light. It's like, you know, you'll have to figure out ways to open a gate or to get up a ledge. And I think if you feel like you're stuck somewhere, especially outdoors, the solution more often than not is to just get on top of Trico and point to like a nearby ledge, and you'll probably be aimed in the right direction and where to go, which leads into the caveats of the game, which are mostly gameplay focused, where I kind of joked that the elephant in the room, or rather the sort of bird dog, is Trico, right? It can be very frustrating. I feel like that is the primary filter point, if you will, for a lot of people in the game. It's like how well can they adjust to having to navigate the commanding of Trico? Because like you said, it is rough early on. Like you have to tell him like two or three times and he's slow. Maybe he'll like scratch himself, or he'll look off in the distance, or he'll won't quite go to the right ledge that you want, but it does take time. Do you have any specific stories, I guess, without spoilers? And I think you mentioned a couple of them, but was there anything that you wanted to elaborate on with commanding Trico?
Yeah, so I like right now as we're talking, I just have one of those long plays up and I'm remembering a few different things. And one of them, aside from the stuff that I already said earlier, is like there's a few different parts where you're trying to get to a ledge. And so you get on Trico's head and the goal is to get him to stand up and kind of lift you up to a ledge or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I don't know if this is because I played the game when it came out, there's a few times I'm like, come on, dude, up, do it. Come on, let's go. I need you to lift me up. And he just stands there. So I try to like move around and slightly go to, you know, back up and then go forward again and be like, okay, stand up. It's time to do it. And he just like every once in a while wouldn't do it. And then he would finally like, oh, you see him start revving up and you're like, okay, finally you get it. So instances like that. And I think, too, the other thing I remember from looking at gameplay videos, there's a couple points where you're like on different ledges or on like something that hung by a chain that you're just trying to like jump. Some of the platforming stuff is a little too ambitious for the game's controls, but nothing too unmanageable, I would say.
Yeah, and there were a lot of cases where like I kind of knew my experience of playing through the game, I kind of understood that even when Trico does do the right thing, it oftentimes takes a few seconds. Like, yeah. it's almost as if it's a massive input delay, but you know, like you kind of have an inkling that Trico's going to do what you want it to do, but it does take a few seconds. And yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There are a couple of points. There's one where you need Trico to basically claw at something to help open a gate so you can place something underneath it. That was like a massive point of annoyance for me. And there's another one without spoilers where you get stuck and you need Trico to do something very, very specific to free you. And it can be very, very aggravating because it involves the camera as well. And that's another caveat of this game, is that there are a lot of tight spaces just due to the nature of you're going through these pathways inside these temples and such, that Trico is very, very large and barely fits in. So when you try to move the camera around, there was one time where my screen went entirely black because the camera was just blocked and I thought my game had frozen. I'm like, oh God, did I just freeze the game? But I had to move the camera so far to reorient and to be able to see the actual game. So yeah, the camera as well is something that I also get. And I think with the patch, it fixes some of the camera issues. I think there were some dead zone issues with the camera to be able to make it more smooth. But yeah, it's just another aspect of if you're trying to command Trico and you're trying to move the camera and you're trying to move the boy, all of these things at once can be incredibly frustrating. And, you know, like we've discussed, I totally get it. Did you have any issue? Do you recall? Did you have any issues with the camera?
I'm trying to remember. I'm sure I did, but no specific moment comes to mind that I could think of.
I even went back and watched a couple of reviews as well and just decided, you know, I'm sure if you've done reviews before, I think you have for your your former awesome Handsome Phantom network.
HandsomePhantom.com from the HP podcast. Wow. You did some research.
I do my own research, but maybe you did this when you did reviews. You kind of look at other reviews and you're like, well, was I going crazy with this opinion or this perspective? Like, was I off base? Yeah. That's what I kind of did after I was done replaying it. I'm like, okay, there was some issues with the camera. I wasn't going crazy. And like I said, it's only in the very interior tight spaces that you have to maneuver in. So it can be tough, but it was very sporadic. We kind of covered the caveats along with the gameplay, so it wasn't too much that separated. But I will say there are a couple of positive caveats. One of them you touched upon already is that if you have the disc version of the game, because why wouldn't you? You should keep games physically. If you have the physical version of the game on disc and you have a PS5, you can play the game. Just make sure you do not download the 1.03 patch. So just play on the original disc version of the game and you can play it at 60 FPS. And my goodness, is it gorgeous, because you really don't lose anything. I think you lose HDR, but I mean, the lighting in the game is already so beautiful from a base level that you don't really lose that much. There was a couple of other updates as well. I think there was sort of stick dead zone fix. And I think there was maybe one or two other things, but the game at 60 FPS with those visuals is just gorgeous. And again, it's the disc version on PS5. The disc version is not very expensive. You can get it pretty affordably, $30 or less. And another caveat is when you finish the game, stay all the way through the credits, because you get the true kind of emotional exclamation point ending. And if you're into trophy hunting, sometimes it's kind of good to get that trophy pop. You don't get the trophy pop for completing the game unless you stay all the way through the credits. So if you do forget to do that, which I did, just absent-minded, you can reload the save, and it's just, you just have to like perform one action at the very end, and then the final cutscene loads and you can do it again. Do you remember on your playthrough, did you have the presence of mind to stay through the credits?
I believe I did, because I remember the post, like when I was rewatching stuff, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this post scene. But I don't know, I'll have to check my trophies, because I feel like I saw this. Maybe I didn't, though. But yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, and even if you're not into trophies, please stay all the way through the credits. Like, trust me, it is the true end of the story. The credits aren't very long either, so you really won't have to wait very long. It's not like you're dealing with a long drawn out Kojima game or something. It's not very long at all. So definitely stay all the way through the credits. So, and I kind of wanted to wrap up with some final thoughts, because I know there's a lot of divisive opinions about this game. And I think shortly after I was done playing it, like, how do I pitch it to someone, like, in one sentence? And I think that the common saying that I thought of is the juice is worth the squeeze. You know, there's a lot of times you're probably going to want to, like, strangle Trico. You're going to want to strangle the boy. You're going to get angry with the controls, the camera, the movement of the boy. Just please stick with it. I think you would echo those sentiments as well. Would you not?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's a game that I hear people when they start it and they're like, I couldn't do it. I somewhat get it, you know, but I also think, like, man, if you would have just had a little more patience and gotten through it, it's worth it. Like you said, the payoffs are totally there. And honestly, maybe my memory is failing me, but I really felt like there are some parts that are annoying for sure, but I never felt like, oh, this is unplayable. You know,
no,
I think that it was definitely somewhat exaggerated.
Yeah, I would agree too. And I think it all kind of depends on, and this may come across as maybe condescending, but I don't think it is. A lot of it depends on how many games you've played as well. If someone who's a rather inexperienced gamer who doesn't necessarily have as much familiarity, or honestly hasn't played enough games to where you've had major issues with certain controls or mechanics in games, this could easily deter you. Like, if your wife Holly wasn't as familiar with games, and she saw it, she's like, oh, I want to play the giant bird dog game.
Yeah.
And they have trouble with, like, a 3D camera, or they have trouble with the bird dog doesn't do exactly what you want it to do all the time on the first attempt. You can certainly nope out of it, despite how gorgeous and beautiful and endearing the sort of dynamic between the boy and the dog can be. Yeah, trust me when I tell you that it is totally worth it. Again, we've said it's not very time demanding. It'll maybe take you 12-ish hours. I think it's like an average playthrough, but it's really paced so very well. And the repeated payoffs throughout the game and the ending payoffs and the final payoff after the credits are so very, very worth it. What would your kind of elevator pitch for this game be?
So this isn't going to hit for everybody, but for like-minded people, I guess, we are drowning in a world of very similar games. And don't get me wrong, I love all kinds of games. I played, you know, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 for over like 100 hours last year. So maybe not that much. I can't remember, but a lot, you know. So I like, you know, tried and true things. But there's also times when it's like, I feel like, man, I just need something new, something different, something unique. And this is one of those games that it's like, there is nothing like it. And so if you fancy yourself more than just like a gamer, you know, like we talked about these games being art. If you view games as art and you're looking for a new experience and something that has these amazing emotional payoffs, amazing art direction, it's one of those games. It's like, yeah, absolutely. And it's not like there's certain games you play and you're like, oh, well, that's unique and it's not very good, but it was different. You know, this is, I think, has a lot of awesome, amazing qualities. And it's just, it's rare that we have games that are to this budget that try totally new things. And sometimes they screw up, you know, and don't get it totally right. But it doesn't mean it's not worth celebrating it for the achievements that it did do well. And I think there, of course, are many for this one.
For sure. Yeah, I totally agree. It's very, very eloquently said. And I don't know if I mentioned this earlier in the program, but that whole Japan Studio outfit is no more. And I think, well, obviously Team Ico is no more. They're called Gen Design now, and they're still operating. And I was talking to someone else shortly after replaying this, and I say I fear, but I think it's the reality now is that I don't think we're going to get a game like this at this production value. When I say a game like this, just a straightforward, very light puzzler sort of companion character bonding story game like this, at this scope and scale, this production value, certainly not one that's going to take 10 plus years to develop. And I fear in some ways this game is, I hate to say it, but it feels like almost it's a relic of a bygone era, unfortunately. So if for nothing else, you can play this game knowing that we're probably not going to get another game like this for a very, very long time, if ever.
Yeah. We'll have to see what Ueda does next, though. I mean,
yes,
he's kind of been dark for a while, but
yes,
I looked it up while we were talking. Apparently, he's going to come out with or announce a new game this year. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Tokyo Game Show is not that far away. So yes. Maybe it's, we'll have to see, though. Does he continue to make his style of games, or does he adapt to something that is a little more serviceable to broader markets? And I really hope not.
It's funny that that's my last show note, but very quickly, when we talk about wanting to preserve these games and wanting to have them for posterity, regardless of digital availability or storefronts or what have you, I can reveal that you're a physical games chat, so I know that's another reason why I had you. I got the steelbook for this game in addition to the physical copy, and the steelbook itself, unsurprisingly, is gorgeous. So,
dude, I'm looking at the collector's edition on eBay right now because I realized that, you know, I remembered that it had one, but I hadn't thought about it in a while. It's got like a beautiful statue, a steelbook, a book. You can get one for like $80. That's not that bad.
Yeah, it's affordable. I got the steelbook, I think, for like $20. I didn't want the whole collector's edition because I'm like, I just don't have the space right now. But I mean, the statue is gorgeous. I mean, I totally. If you were going to snag it, I totally get that. And I would have, but again, I didn't have the room to like properly put it on display.
Right.
Yeah, I at least got the steelbook. It's gorgeous. I got the physical copy, so I was very, very happy with that. And again, like you probably echo this as well. It kind of makes a statement that it's like, hey, if we're going to call this like a real, sort of like if you want to call it like an elevated work of art, like you said, that games are art, all games mm-hmm. are, there's certainly an elevated aspect to this. And I think there's something to be said for preserving true pieces of elevated art like that. And the final note I have is that looking forward for Ueda and Gen Design. Yeah. The last update I think was earlier this year where he said he was hoping to be able to reveal the game this year. I think there is one or two pieces of concept art that I think do sort of straddle that line between looking like a Ueda game, but also potentially being something new, which I think is exciting because I think after 10 years, I wouldn't necessarily expect him to do something that is necessarily has the exact same look of a Shadow of the Colossus or an Ico or a Last Guardian, but still kind of has that Ueda overall aesthetic to it. Yeah, it is being funded by Epic Games. So, I mean, they certainly don't have a shortage of cash, which, you know, Epic, you know, they're obviously by many considered like a bane of the industry between their ties to Tencent and their owning of Fortnite. But if they can fund really auteur creators, you know, they funded Alan Wake 2, which is coming out later this year, which I think Remedy is a popular developer who may not sell as well. And then Ueda as well. Whatever this man and his team makes, I will try my best to be there day one. And I think you would be the same. Would you not?
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see what he's showing off. Let's see. It's been, again, it's going to be close to 10 years. So whatever he's working on, any final thoughts? Please just play this game. Please give it a shot.
So I'll give you a little bit of trivia from my life, not trivia, but a fun fact that the day we got Frisk, we initially went, and we saw her for the first time from the woman that had her dog had puppies. And we went home, and literally on the way home, we had called that woman. We're like, yeah, we want the girl dog. Holly and I were like, we'll come back later. We got to go get supplies and get our house ready. And she was like, cool. So we're at home. We were discussing like, what are we going to name this beautiful puppy? What do we name her? And one of the names I threw out was Trico to name Frisk, which we ultimately decided not to. Because we decided Frisk, which also is from a video game with it being Undertale, but Trico was one of the strong contenders for Frisk's name initially. So, but yeah. So as far as other final thoughts about this game, yeah, I just think Trico is so incredibly cute. And I guess this ties into what I just said about Frisk is that looking at this game and looking at the gameplay again, like remembering playing through it, I'm like, oh man. So many things that I'm like, oh, what if it was like a big Frisk? It kind of reminds me of that. So I love this game. I hope more people check it out, especially if you listen to this podcast. Please give it a listen give this podcast a listen, but give the game a try, and you can get it super cheap. So why not?
Yeah. And then I don't know. Have you played all three of Yuya's games.
No, you surprisingly, haven't? No, I've not played Eco.
Eco is very short. It's like around 6-ish hours. I'm going to replay it very shortly before looking to record with Radic. So it's very, very short. Yeah.
Yeah. It just sucks that I mean, I have a PlayStation 3 and stuff that I could hook up and play. It's just annoying. It's on
streaming. It's on PS Plus. That's how I'm going.
Oh, gross. No. How dare you even suggest that? I've got physical hardware, man. I just have to get a disc or something for it at some point.
Yeah, I would recommend playing all of his games in chronological order, honestly. It depends, you know. I mean, a lot of people would recommend playing Shadow of the Colossus last because many people consider it his best, but I would say play The Last Guardian because of the emotional payoff. I think the entire journey of the three games, I think that payoff in The Last Guardian is a good sort of exclamation point for this sort of pseudo trilogy. And you don't have to worry about the games. There's a lot of aesthetic consistencies, but they don't take place in like the same timeline or universe or anything.
I have one thing that I thought of, one quote from the game that I really like. And again, sorry for I'm talking about Frisk so much, but how can you not when it's a game that's about your bond?
We started with Frisk. We're going to end with Frisk.
So. Yeah. There's a part where I believe he says, and this is one of the few narrator quotes, I believe he says, in my memories, the monster always had kind eyes. And I always loved that line, just thinking about, obviously, Treecko in the game is this beast that, you know, isn't supposed to be kind, but is and has kind. You can see it. And so I always think of that. And I've told that to Holly. Frisk is the monster that has kind eyes. And I don't know. I love that. It's just very cute.
Yeah, and Treecko, that's another effect with Treecko, how it's a technical achievement, is the effects on the eyes are just amazing. As well. So we've reached a point where I don't think we can talk about anymore without spoiling, which I am always very, very leery of. But Dustin, thank you so much. I'm glad that we were able to do this sort of Ueda bookend companion episodes. And yeah, I think I'm going to drop it shortly after I do the Eco episode with Radic. I'm just going to surprise everyone. So it'll be
awesome.
It'll be really, really great.
I'm just going to, you know, I'm inviting myself back on when we'll do the complete Kingdom Hearts series. So you'll have to play through all of that, and then I can defend that why everybody should play that. I know you would love that, right?
Yeah, I would love that, as long as you agree to come on for the next Ueda game.
Oh, let's do that. Yeah, that sounds fun. I'm definitely down for that.
Yeah, I mean, the Kingdom Hearts games for me, any kind of suffering in Last Guardian would be trivial compared to the suffering I would
have
in Kingdom Hearts. So
good.
It would be a true trial. But no, I actually have joked with people that when I do get around to like playing all the Kingdom Hearts games, I would stream them just to like, you know, maximize the entertainment.
So, right. Yeah. Just put your suffering on display for everybody. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. People's pain is funny. I mean, that's just how it is. But no, Dustin, thank you again. I will let you get back to your lovely parents. Is there any lasagna left over? Your mom's lasagna?
There is a little bit. And they're leaving tomorrow morning. And so I was like, sweet, I'm going to get these leftovers all to myself. And then my dad's like, well, I might eat it for breakfast. I was like, eating the lasagna for breakfast, unacceptable, but totally a move that my dad would do. So it's not surprising.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, Italian leftovers hit differently though. Do they not? I mean, like, dude, whether it's spaghetti, oh, geez, it's just extra comfort food.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The reheated lasagna is arguably better than when it's fresh. In some ways.
Yeah, because you let like the cheese and the sauce soak in and like,
woo. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that's good. But no, thank you. Thank you again, Dustin. Thank you to all of you out there listening. And we will see you next time.
Yeah.